Chapter 12. The Symbolic Character. No matter how completed or limited, all characters mean more than themselves. Every figure you create is a metaphor for either a social identity, mother, child, boss, employee, or an inner identity, good, evil, wise, naive, or a combination of the two. These roles form castes that can be divided into two grand affinities, realism and symbolism. Some storytellers create castes inspired by daily observation and then set them to cope with everyday hell. Other writers, such as the creators of the DC Comics and Marvel universes, work with an awareness of a symbolic dimension in their casts, costuming them in imaginary characterizations. For writers of speculative fiction, fantasy, sci-fi, horror, superhero, supernatural, magical realism, and the many subgenres of each, the symbol weighs more than its personification. For writers of conventional realism, dramas and comedies that center in down-to-earth problems of families, personal relationships, social institutions, legal systems, and moral psychology, the personification counts for more than the symbol. Symbols evolve involuntarily during the writing. No author, no matter his talent, can deliberately create an all-new symbol from scratch. They are timeless. You can only borrow them. Symbols arise in this way. As the mind sees, hears, or touches an object, it instinctively asks, "What is this thing? And why is it what it is?" Intellect and imagination then peer beneath the surface, as it were, looking for intrinsic structures and hidden causes. Over time, the insights they capture become idealized into meaning-rich, power-compressing icons. Examples? Inspired by the curvatures found in nature, the mind pictured the perfect geometric circle, and then elevated this abstraction into a symbol for the cycle of life. Pregnant women exude the energy of replicating DNA that our ancestors deified as the Earth Mother. The ocean's turbulence reminds sailors of an angry, punishing father, who the Greeks then reimagined as Poseidon. Edible plants and animals become the ritual of meal-taking that avant-garde chefs perfected into haute cuisine. This movement, from particular to general to ideal, generates the luminous, often fantastic images of symbolism. And where do writers find these visions? In their dreams. Dreaming in symbols is an evolutionary adaptation the pre-Homo sapiens psyche acquired hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions, of years ago. Its adaptive purpose is to protect sleep. When you toss and turn at night, what pours through your brain? Racing thoughts, those hopes and hungers, dreads and fears, passions and angers, longings and lovings, the unresolved conflicts a weary mind cannot control. Hindus symbolize the human mind as the chattering monkey, the yak, 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 yak of thoughts running through the brain without pause every minute of every hour of every day and night. This prattle keeps you awake until the pineal gland secretes its melatonin and you drift into sleep. Dreaming then compresses your streaming thoughts inside symbols, giving intelligence a chance to rest and the body a chance to heal. In the way a piston concentrates heat by reducing the volume inside a cylinder, a symbol creates power by compacting multiple meanings into a single image. A bearded figure, for example, dressed in robes, seated in a great chair, looking down from above, symbolizes the Father. This image radiates complex ideas of judgment, wisdom, insight, and absolute authority, along with fear of punishment, guilt over broken rules, gratitude for protection, and adoration rooted in respect and dread. This grand mix of meanings and emotions condenses inside one image. Symbolic character spectrum. The spectrum of symbolism in character creation spans from the brightest to the dimmest, beginning with the radiance of archetypes, followed by the glow of allegories, then the muted shades of types, and finally the gray outlines of stock characters. Principle. Archetypes turn essences into characters. Humanity invented archetypes as instinctively as birds weave nests and spiders spin webs. The symbolic power of an archetypal image is so universal, it can be endlessly varied in its details, yet never lose its basic pattern. No matter how an archetype's veneer shifts from culture to culture, from animation to live action, its presence commands fascination. Archetypes inhabit four major components of storytelling: events, settings, objects, roles. 1. Events such as the sacred birth, the fall from grace, the battle between good and evil. 2. Settings such as the desert as ground for meditation, the garden as the miracle of fertility, the castle as the seat of authority. 3. Objects such as light as the symbol of hope, red as the color of passion, or the heart as the icon for love. 4. Roles such as star-crossed lovers, the outcast wandering in exile, the wizard waving a magic wand. An archetypal character, like a stone sculpture, is the same inside as out. The Earth Mother, for example, concentrates all aspects of motherhood: giver of life, nurturer of innocence, forgiver of failings, into one rock-solid identity. She has no subtext. She never pretends, never jokes, never thinks an ironic thought. No hidden wishes contradict her pronouncements. No secret feelings complicate her actions. She simply mothers. Archetypes expand and contract. The hag, the crone, and the wise woman are all variations of the Earth Mother. They may or may not have magical or supernatural powers. They may or may not be disagreeable, malicious, or malevolent. They may or may not be helpful. Compare the Wicked Witch of the West and the Good Witch of the North in The Wizard of Oz. to a greater or lesser degree, a character, realistic or fantasized, stands for his ancient original. Although rooted in its archetype, once on the stage, page, or screen, the character then diminishes the ideal because perfection can only be imagined, not performed. To freshen these repetitions, the writer must invent ingenious new traits of characterization. Character archetypes are limited in number, but from Plato to Carl Jung to today's writers of speculative fiction, no one agrees on what that number is. Many are drawn from religion: God, devil, angel, demon. Some are found in domestic life: mother, queen, father, king, child, prince, princess, servant. And others are inspired by social conflicts: the hero, the rebel, monsters or villains, tricksters or clowns, and helpers: the sage, mentor, magician. This last archetype, the helper, has given us Gandalf in The Lord of the Rings, Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars, Merlin in the many versions of the King Arthur myth, and the fairy godmother in even more tellings. And of course, one role can combine two or more archetypes. Prospero, the protagonist of Shakespeare's The Tempest, combines wizard, mentor, ruler, hero, and villain. Because an archetypal character in speculative fiction is dimensionless, he's incapable of change. A superhero may resist the task, but in time, he'll put on his cape and fly to the rescue. Therefore, the purer the archetype, the less we care about his past or future, the less we imagine him outside his immediate scenes, the less we discern his inner life, and the more predictable become his actions. Because the complex character of realism is dimensional and changeable, the archetypal role and the myth he rode in on become less important. Nonetheless, whether grounded or imaginary, a character vibrates with greater intensity when he strikes an archetypal chord in the subconscious mind of the reader or audience. If, on the other hand, the reader audience thinks the conscious thought, he's a symbol for whatever. If they recognize a character as symbolic, the role flattens and its impact drains away. Therefore, veil symbolism behind a never-seen-before characterization. Fascinate the reader audience with whom the character seems to be, then quietly smuggle your archetype in below the reader audience awareness and let it slip into their subconscious, where they will feel its presence without knowing or caring why. Principle: allegories turn values into characters. Like an archetype, an allegorical character is also made from a single substance, but with less density. Whereas an archetype concentrates all facets of a universal role, hero, mother, mentor, into a single persona, an allegorical character embodies only one facet, positive or negative. In the moral universe of an allegorical setting, the cast personifies a pattern of values. In the medieval morality play Everyman, for example, each character personifies an aspect of human existence, such as knowledge, beauty, strength, or death. In the alternative worlds of Jonathan Swift's satire Gulliver's Travels, populations represent values such as pettiness, bureaucracy, absurd science, and obedience to authority. William Golding set his novel Lord of the Flies on an island where schoolboys collectively represent humanity, while individually they symbolize values such as democracy versus tyranny, civility versus savagery, and the rational versus irrational mind. Pixar's Inside Out created an allegory inside its protagonist's subconscious mind by selecting 5 emotional values and writing them into characters: joy, sadness, anger, fear, and disgust. Other examples? A lion as wisdom in the Chronicles of Narnia, and as cowardice in The Wizard of Oz, Lord Business as corporate tyranny in the Lego Movie, an enormous stuffed whale as the apocalypse in Laszlo Kozanorkai's novel The Melancholy of Resistance, Tweedledum and Tweedledee as difference without difference in Alice Through the Looking Glass, the allegorical cast of Steven Universe on the Cartoon Network take their identities from gemstones. Principle: types turn a behavior into a character. Stories, especially those in the genres of realism, need not include an archetypal or an allegorical character, but few can be cast without a type or two. A type is an animated adjective. Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, adapting the Brothers Grimm fairy tale, turned 7 adjectives into the characters sleepy, bashful, grumpy, happy, sneezy, dopey, and doc, meaning smart. These non-dimensional supporting roles act out a single trait of behavior, such as muddled, caring, blaming, fretting, artistic, shy, jealous, panicked, cruel, or a single trait of temperament, such as the indifferent clerk, the talkative cabbie, the unhappy little rich girl. All adjectives have an opposite charge of value: happy versus miserable, daydreamy versus vigilant, whiny versus stoic, thus doubling the number of possible types. The first storytellers typed characters according to their social role: king, queen, warrior, servant, herdsman, etc. But in the Nicomachean Ethics, Aristotle began studying people by personality. He used adjectives such as excessively vain, great of soul, choleric, good-tempered, officious, contentious, and the like. Aristotle's student Theophrastus expanded this idea in his The Study of the Character. He lists 30 brief, trenchant types, giving us an insightful portrait of his time and humanity at large. All 30, however, are negatively toned: superstitious, lying, nervous, pretentious, buffoonish, flattering, boring, bragging, cowardly, and so on. He could have listed correspondingly positive examples: rational, truthful, calm, modest, wise, sincere, entertaining, discreet, heroic, but I suspect negative types were great fun for his readers. The comedy writer Menander cast many of Theophrastus's types in farces, with titles such as The Grouch, The Peevish Man, The Misogynist, and The Man Nobody Likes. To elevate an extra into a type, simply give him a specific behavior. A nondescript teenager steps out of the crowd and takes on a role when, despite his best efforts to control himself, he constantly giggles with embarrassment. For example, three familiar types. The fanatic. The fanatic may be a bored misfit, an untalented artist, or a chronic discontent, but in all cases, he rejects his meaningless life and hates himself for who he is not. In search of a new identity, he joins a movement that gives him a new name, new uniform, and new vocabulary. So equipped, he becomes a fanatic for the thing he loves and a hater of everything opposed to it. At rock bottom, the angry fanatic projects his self-loathing onto something or someone foreign. For thought-provoking examples, study Daniel Ballant, played by Ryan Gosling, and Henry Bean's The Believer. Freddie Quill, played by Joaquin Phoenix, in Paul Thomas Anderson's film The Master. Syndrome, played by Jason Lee, in Brad Bird's film The Incredibles. The hipster. The hipster is the opposite of the fanatic. He obsesses on the only thing he loves, himself. He wears forgotten fashions like Hawaiian shirts, collects antique things like portable record players. He takes up pointless hobbies like home brewing. The hipster wants to be one of a kind, not with fresh ideas of his own, but from things nobody else wants. To deflect mockery, he brags about his failure to do anything meaningful. To prevent criticism, he adopts an "I'm only kidding" smirk and lives ironically by hiding in public. For hip examples, consider Jeff Bridges as The Big Lebowski, John Heder as Napoleon Dynamite, and Oscar Isaac as the title character in Inside Llewyn Davis. The cool. Cool describes an emotionally controlled, never eager or needy, detached, and self-possessed type. He stands still, quiet, and opaque, depriving the reader audience of insight. We sense that he has a secret past, but we never know for sure. Gracefully skilled, he has found a unique way to make a living, but only he knows what it is. A morally ambiguous realist, he lives by his own code in an absurd world. He doesn't need or want applause. He knows his worth. We sense his depth, but can only guess what's behind his eyes. Examples of cool? The enigmatic murderess Juliet Fontaine in I've Loved You So Long suffers decades of silence for her secret. Amy in Gone Girl impersonates many lethal selves, none of which are her. Clint Eastwood played cool in films such as Play Misty for Me and High Plains Drifter. Principle. Stocks turn a job into a character. Types act out a behavior. Stocks take a job. Fictional societies require citizens playing social roles defined primarily by their work. People in the insecure gig economy grad students waiting tables, elderly greeters at Walmart, artists doing something other than their art, cannot control their future. Because their jobs contradict what they want out of life, they may become too interesting and dimensional to play stock characters. Instead, people in secure positions tend to work in fields small enough that they can control its machinery. Lawyers, house painters, doctors, golf club pros, and the like. Job security may dull their inner creativity, as well as their empathy for clients, homeowners, patients, and club members, but professions such as these, placed around the principles, become stock rules. The first stock characters were given props on stage so audiences could identify them. Shepherds carry a crook. Ambassadors carry a caduceus. Kings, a scepter. Heroes, a sword. Old men, a staff. The Roman satirist Plautus used and reused farcical stocks. Rich miser, clever slave, stupid slave, slave dealer, prostitute, braggart soldier, and the hanger-on parasite that today we would call a groupie. As they carry out their tasks, stocks make no choices. Doctors deliver bad news to families. Lawyers explain provisions in a will. Beggars beg. Whether cliched or freshly drawn, the great advantage of stock characters is an instant recognition of purpose that lessens the need for exposition. The reader audience knows why a stock has entered a story and his task in the telling. As they do their job, however, stocks needn't be dull. A stock can be worth his moment in the light if you give him a one-of-a-kind characterization, a unique technique he uses to carry out his task. Stock roles go in and out of fashion. Prosperity preachers replace hippie gurus. Russian spies exit, Middle East terrorists enter. Man-made monsters are out. People with genetic mutations are in. Space aliens are passé. Zombie hordes are hip. Because stocks must act within their job and types within their type, they make very few, if any, choices. For that reason, they constantly risk becoming clichés. A cliché is a once superb idea that's been copied to death and now is done without originality. As Henry James pointed out, cliched characters are used, but never used up. Are the old miser, young spendthrift, penny pincher, gambler, drunk, and teetotaler never to appear again because they've been done before? Of course not. In the hands of an imaginative writer, a stock can be wonderfully idiosyncratic. Arnold Schwarzenegger's assassin in The Terminator is a menacing villain, type and stock, but the melding of machine-human gave him a characterization like no other. In fact, over recent decades, the origin stories of superheroes make them seem more and more like super stocks doing their job. Archetypal 20th century creations such as Thor, a Norse god, Wonder Woman, a Greek goddess, and the godlike Superman are born super. While 21st century heroes turn super by accident. A radioactive bug bites Silk. A random mutagen infects Ms. Marvel. Or by scientists doing it themselves. Iron Man builds his own supersuit. Galaxy Quest satirizes this trend when stock actors become archetypes for stock aliens. Principle: stereotypes turn prejudice into character. Stereotyping begins with a fallacy. All X's are Y. The wealthy, for example, often stereotype the poor as lazy. The poor stereotype the too rich as cruel. Prejudices, for that reason, are worse than clichés. A cliché is a very good idea somebody had a very long time ago. Since then, writers have drummed this invention into a cliché, but it still holds a truth. Stereotypes, instead, distort the truth. A stereotype models itself after an archetype, but reduces grandeur to bias. The Earth Mother becomes the Jewish mother. The wise king becomes the mean boss. The warrior hero becomes the street hustler. The goddess becomes the hooker. The magician becomes the mad scientist. Why do stereotypes persist? Because they're easy to write. Realistic characters demand work from the writer, reader, and audience. Realistic versus symbolic characters. Realism and symbolism create characters at opposite ends of the caste spectrum, one rooted in fact, the other in abstraction. In between these two extremes run the mixtures and mergers of qualities that make possible every character ever imagined. So let's separate these two poles to see what they are and how they influence character creation. The symbolist tradition began in prehistoric myths. Mankind's earliest storytelling symbolized the forces of nature: sun, moon, lightning, thunder, seas, mountains, into gods, demigods, and other supernatural beings. In these myths, gods create the cosmos, and with it, human beings. Paraphrased from epic to epic, culture to culture, myths travel, mouth to ear, with slight loss of meaning, because they are not literature. In myths, words mean little. Symbolic characters and actions, everything. The realist tradition dates back to Homer's vivid descriptions of warrior psychology and blood-spattered battles in the Iliad. Realism seeks to portray life as lived, unclouded by false beliefs or sentimental beautifications. Its straightforward dramatizations avoid symbolic dream fiction to emphasize hard-edged thought fiction, characters living in the as-is rather than the as-wished-for. The key differences between realistic and symbolic characters number at least 10. 1. Truth. Factuality versus wish fulfillment. Realism grapples with a factual world in which wishes almost never come true, whereas the symbolic genres of speculative fiction, myths and fantasies, both ancient and modern, put wish fulfillment into action. The heroes and superheroes of today, with or without magical powers, live in a strictly moral universe where good always triumphs over evil, love conquers all, and death does not end life. Other symbolic genres, such as fables and legends, treat wishes as dark and dangerous, and so they tell cautionary tales that teach moral lessons. The Fox and the Grapes by Aesop, Hansel and Gretel by the Brothers Grimm, The Legend of the House of Atreus are three classic examples. Modern fables warn of a dystopian future. George Orwell's 1984, Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale, Naomi Alterman's The Power. 2. True character, complex psychology versus imposing personality. Symbolic tellings incite conflicts between characters rather than contradictions within characters. As a result, symbolic characters have remarkable, imposing personalities, while realistic characters develop complex psychologies. Compare Batman, aka Bruce Wayne, to Saul Goodman, aka Jimmy McGill. 3. Level of conflict, outer versus inner. Symbolic characters take action against external antagonistic social and physical forces, while realistic characters often battle self-doubt, self-deception, self-criticism, and other such inner confusions and invisible demons. 4. Complexity, solid versus dimensional. Like the archetypes that inspire them, modern mythical characters have traits, but no dimensions, desires, but no contradictions, a text, but no subtext. They are one-piece symbols inside and out. Multidimensional realistic characters, on the other hand, string dynamic contradictions between their public, personal, private, and hidden selves. 5. Detail. Scarcity versus density. The symbolist writer of fables, legends, and myths focuses on the essential. He simplifies the density of reality by avoiding meticulous traits of characterization. The realist author, on the other hand, gathers telling details that enrich and specify his characters. Compare, for example, the smooth outlines of the animated family in The Incredibles with the painstakingly particularized family in 6 Feet Under. 6. Comprehension. Hard versus easy. Realism calls for concentration and perception. A character seems real in proportion to how much we consider his total self. The more contradictory yet consistent, the more changeable yet unified, the more unpredictable yet credible, the more specific yet mysterious the role, the more real, fascinating, and intriguing he becomes. He makes us work to understand him, but rewards us with insight once we do. Consider Vicomte de Valmont, Dangerous Liaison, Thomas Studpin, Absalom, Absalom, and Jimmy McGill, Better Call Saul. The symbolic characters of myth, legend, and fable are instantly and easily understood. The more generalized, predictable, and text-bound the role, the less surprising, less intriguing, less real he becomes. Consider Albus Dumbledore, Mad Max, and Superman. 7. Worldview. Skeptical versus sentimental. Realism encourages characters treated with tough-minded sentiment, symbolism often sweetens its roles with sentimentality. Sentiment is a feeling that flows when a credible motivation compels a powerful action. A parent risking everything for a child, as in playwright Henrik Ibsen's Ghosts, or Alvin Sargent's screenplay For Ordinary People. Sentimentality, however, manipulates emotion by using phony causes to trigger false effects. The forced happy ending, for example, is a device as antique as Hans Christian Andersen's The Little Mermaid and as yesterday as Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds. 8. Endings. Irony versus simplicity. The writers of realism grapple with life's constant duality. The steps you take to achieve something are exactly what's necessary to make sure you never get it, while the steps you take to avoid something take you directly to it. Whether climaxing in grief or joy, realism turns a double effect. Positive endings demand great sacrifice, while tragedies bring insight and wisdom. Reality is relentlessly ironic, and characters suffer accordingly. With the exception of authors like Philip K. Dick, myth, fable, and legend resist irony. They cast characters who act out straight, pure, positive stories. 9. Character dynamics. Flexible versus rigid. Realism reveals the truths hidden in its characters and then often flexes their inner natures with change. Symbolic roles possess one rigid quality through and through, and therefore have nothing to reveal or change. Realism is skeptical. Myths, wishful. Test myths against reality, and their archetypes are exposed for the wish fulfillments that they always were. In the early 20th century, psychologist Carl Jung based theories about the collective unconscious on archetypes drawn from myths. Expanding on Jung, Joseph Campbell concocted a monomyth popularly known as the Hero's Journey, hoping to replace Christianity with his personal brand of spiritualism. Hollywood action myths hammered Campbell's pseudomyth about the hero's quest into a template to mass-produce summer hits. 10. Social dynamics. Flexible versus rigid. The class structure in symbolist genres tends to cast a ruler at the top, peasants at the bottom, the rest somewhere in between. Realism moves power through its cast with fluidity, even if the telling is set in a monarchy or dictatorship. Case study: Game of Thrones. David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, adapting George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire to the long-form screen, brought harsh realism to high fantasy. Between the black and white outlines of symbolism, they drew characters in every possible shade of gray. They merged the autocracy of myth with the freedom of fiction to create a vast cast of 160 roles representing all degrees of realism and symbolism, plus all possible points on the political compass. On the extreme right, the tyrannical Cersei of House Lannister, protector of the Seven Kingdoms. On the progressive left, the graceful Daenerys of House Targaryen, mother of dragons. Cersei embodies retrogressive, incestuous, matriarch, monarchical despotism. Temperamentally, she's pro-feudalism and anti-change. Daenerys embodies the future-leaning, humanistic spirit of justice and progress. Temperamentally, she's anti-feudalism and pro-change. Daenerys denies myth. Cersei lives myth. Within this polarized world, the writers array the meritocracy of the Night's Watch, the egalitarianism of the Unsullied, the fanaticism of the Sparrows, and the democracy of councils in which equals cast votes to make decisions. Death, however, has no politics. So when the Night King and his horde of White Walkers invade, the tension between symbolism and realism fades into the question of who lives and who dies. How to make the old new. You hope to invent characters unlike any ever seen. But for thousands of years, storytellers have created, recreated, and recycled characters by the millions, literally. You write in this tradition, and therefore, your character's core identity will echo an archetype, an allegory, a type, or a stock. Your task is to create within the known, otherwise no one will know how to respond to your work, and yet make your characters unique, fresh, and unlike any ever met before. Try one of these four paths. 1. Within the genres of speculative fiction, create plausible motivations for implausible actions. 2. Within the genres of realism, create characters who live off-center lives and see people and actions in an off-center way. 3. In either subset, give characters radical experiences that shock old beliefs into the new. 4. In either subset, add a sense of immediacy by writing in character. In prose, write from the POV of a character who has lived these events in the past. On screen or on stage, take the POV of a character living them in the now.